Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of Wild, Wicked, and Weird. I am your co-host, Brett Hedges, along with my beautiful co-host, the tall, dark, and handsome.
You want to redo that? You said co-host twice.
Three, two, one. Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of Wild, Wicked, and Weird. I am your host, Brett Hedges, along with my beautiful co-host, the tall, dark, and handsome.
Hi. I'm Will Vojvodik. Hello, hello.
I had to give you a little bit of a pause there just to make sure that you were paying attention.
I didn't know
attention.
If you were going to keep talking or something. Oh, I'm paying attention.
That's right. That's right, folks. We're just two wild, wicked, and weird guys from Windsor, Ontario, taking a deep dive into the crazy-ass stories that come from our hometown of Windsor, Ontario, and around the world. And we are glad that you are joining us today for episode 21. 21, feeling fun, forever 21. That's not even a store anymore. My goodness.
Yeah, I think
thanks, COVID.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, you guys can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook at Wild, Wicked, and Weird Podcast. We're on Twitter at Wild, Wicked, W. And we're on Gmail at Wild, Wicked, and Weird at gmail.com. So, drop a like, drop a post. We're also on YouTube. So, yeah. Oh, and we're on TikTok.
TikTok.
I was like, should I admit that? Should I say it? But we'll see.
Wake up in the morning feeling. Oh, not the Kesha song?
TikTok, oh, is that her song?
On the clock,
oh,
DJ,
yeah.
Turn my speakers
I don't
up
think it's
tonight.
That one, no,
no.
Yeah.
It's that fancy apps the kids are using nowadays.
I guess so.
Oh, well, if you find this on there, give us a follow. And of course, you can follow us on social media all over the place. And really, that's really all I got. Thanks for folks for the 5-star reviews, actually.
Yes.
To give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And, you know, it helps generate the show, keeps us going. And other than that, I think some crazy shit we're going to tell these people this week, right?
Right.
Yeah, we got a couple of hometown stories this week, both taking part in Windsor, Ontario. And obviously this past week, last week was Father's Day. And that was a lot of fun. Do you have any fun Father's Day stories or just like funny stories about your dad you want to share? I got one about my dad.
Our Father's Day was nice. Yeah, it was just a casual day. I got my dad some... You know, just a card and some gift cards. Or
oh, I'm talking about like when you're a kid. Like, what's something that you think of?
You know, like.
You want me to tell you mine so I can
yeah,
warm you up?
Tell
okay.
me, yeah.
So when I was about 11 years old, me and my dad was a baseball coach for Harrow Minor Baseball, and my team with a bunch of my friends, like growing up, we were playing in like D level baseball, not A, B, or C, like D level baseball. And we were in Mosquito, and this is when you're first pitching, right?
What's Mosquito?
Mosquito is like when you first start pitching, like you're in grade 5.
Oh, it's the type of league you mean?
Type of league,
okay.
Yeah, like the age group name. Is it Mosquito, Pee-wee, Bantam, that kind of thing. And my dad was helping coach the Mosquito team, and we're messing around at practice a few weeks before OBA, saying, yeah, we're going to win provincials, we're going to win the Ontario title, that kind of thing. He's getting frustrated with us, he goes, if you guys win the Ontario title, I'll shave my head.
I'm going to divorce your mom.
Please, no. But he goes, we'll shave your head.
Right?
No, he's got a full head of hair. He's got nice hair. And, well, what do you know? We go on a tear on this tournament. We go undefeated, and we win the whole damn thing.
Nice.
Right? We're in grade 5. And we doesn't really realize until, like, after, like, we win, and then, like, we go, oh, my God. My dad made that bet with us.
Okay.
We get to shave his head. And so it was all of a sudden, we were super excited that we won the tournament. And then the next half hour, we're like, oh my God, we get to shave Mr. Hedges' head. Yeah.
Nice.
And so the next day at a humongous party, we shaved my dad's head in the front yard of someone's yard. And we like honk to
you
support
go to ultimate
the
cuts.
No.
Get them faded.
No. We were better barbers than the guys at Ultimate Cuts, unfortunately. We were both 11 years old. Everyone got to shave his head like one strip.
Nice.
So it was good. And I was like, oh my God, he's so old. He's not going to grow his hair back. This is awful.
Yeah.
It's a terrible idea. Little did I know that he had great hair.
Yeah.
And he's going to do that. But
I remember when
thing.
I was watching Star Wars when Yoda was dying. Mm-hmm. And I think it was number three. You all right there? You keep fiddling with the mic every 2 seconds.
You keep moving away from the mic. Your voice isn't that strong.
I am closer to the mic right now than you.
Okay.
That's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
But what were we talking about? Oh, yeah, balding hair. So in Star Wars, you know when Yoda's dying?
Yes.
Our babysitter, Lori, This is the same babysitter who, whenever we acted up, she would just press on, off, 10 times on the, or 7 times on the phone and said she was calling the pirates.
The pirates are coming.
So she would say, yeah, that's how you know you're dying. If your hair starts to, like, you know, bald and lose hair on the back of your head, like, you're going to die that day, you know? And I'm like, holy shit. And, like, I would be at the mall and I'd see some, like, 45-year-old guy with just a little bit of hair in the back and it was falling off. And I'm like, he doesn't have long. Just like Master Yoda. So, like, that always stuck with me. And looking back, like, that... And then there was the pirates thing. Yes. Like, I was terrified of being taken away by these pirates. And
sounds like your parents hired a bullshit babysitter.
No, she was great. Okay. She was awesome. She was the best babysitter.
Beside the scare tactics.
We'd stay up and watch Boy Meets World and Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Yeah. And if we were good, we could watch Norm, which came on at 9:30.
Norm McDonald.
He was,
right,
like, 28, and he always wore, like, a really boring, like, plaid shirt, or, like, just a blue shirt. Yeah. Like you'd expect him to be a Crip on the streets of South Central L.A. Just, yeah, like, a blue shirt.
This is,
like,
Norm McDonald you're talking about, the comedian?
Yes. Remember he had the show Norm on ABC? Right.
But it just reminded me that you got to serve him one time.
Oh,
when,
yeah,
we were in Windsor. Tell that story.
So I was working at a bar. I won't name which one.
It's a good downtown. It's a good bar.
Good one. And Norm McDonald came in because he was playing at the casino.
Yep.
But even better than that is that Norm was accompanied by a guy named, oh, what's his name? It was like Bray some, I don't know. But anyways, if you watch the show Everybody Loves Raymond, he's Raymond's cousin. He's okay. The very monotone, hello, Raymond, how are you?
The short guy with the glasses.
He's also, not really, no. But okay, remember in Dumb and Dumber when, yeah, the guy's on the phone booth and the mobster, he's like, get off the phone, and he punches him through the phone,
yes,
booth. He's like, hello, yes, yes. Well, he's also in an episode of Seinfeld.
Yes.
Yeah, when he talks to Elaine, and he's like, and Elaine is attracted to him because he's so repulsive and just not interested in her,
yes,
which is a really funny, you know, take on the reality of it,
yes,
you know, hard playing hard to get and stuff. But she's like, oh, hi, Glenn, how are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm not doing too good. I bought a new shirt and the button fell off. Once the button falls off, that's it. Game over. I'll never fix it. And she's like, this man is so depressed. I need him. And so I love Seinfeld and I love this guy. So when, yeah, I saw him at the Manchester, I brought out his soup. He's like, oh, thanks. How's your day going? And I said the line. I was like, you know, I bought a new shirt and the button falls off. And once the button falls in, that's it. Game over. And he looked at me and he looked at Norm McDonald. He's like, ah, oh, he knows. He watches the show. That's funny. I like it, huh? And then I came out again. Because we were so happy that Norm, yeah, McDonald was there. And I came out and I said the line from Dirty Work.
That's right.
And like, oh my God, I've never seen so many dead hookers in all my life. And Norm loved it. And I didn't go to the show, but apparently someone who did go to the show said he brought it up in his act. He was like, you know, I was in one of your bars today and one of the cooks came out and started telling lines from Dirty Work with dead hookers. I love that stuff. And so... my buddy Joe texted me. He's like, dude, Norm talked about you. Norm McDonald talked about you,
That's super, like, full circle, though, because you got to watch him. Like, that was, like, the treat for you to stay up late and watch him, right? So that's really cool.
To look up that guy's name now. Sorry.
I know exactly who you're talking about. He's the nasally guy. He has big nose, but, like, he's
Do you remember in Dumb and Dumber, though, when he's trying to
get off the phone?
Sir, are you going to get off the phone?
Help me, please. Can you please get off the phone? He's a great actor. He's in a lot of stuff. He's like one of those guys who are like, oh yeah, I've seen him in like a lot of shit.
I think he's in Austin Powers too, when there's the big boobs in the sky satellites. He's like,
yes,
it looks like a giant pair of melons! Big, juicy melons! He's one of those guys.
He's one of those guys. He's a great character.
Okay,
actor.
His name in the show is Cousin Gerard, but
yes,
the real, his name is Fred Stoller.
Stoller.
Fred Stoller. And he was a nice guy. Norm McDonald was a really nice guy, too. He was just awesome, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't drink.
No? Good.
No, he likes to gamble. I think he hit up the casino, hit up, yeah, Caesars. But he loved the food. He came back a second time.
Because
that place has really good food. It's the Manchester.
Yeah.
Okay, I might as well say it. Yeah,
you said
good.
It earlier, so.
I think I'm allowed back
there. You're allowed. You're allowed back there. You didn't leave that
awesome.
Bad.
Yeah, so I'm sure Norm comes back. Yeah, but... that's my celebrity story.
That's so dope. I forgot. I've never really had that.
What
I don't
were we
know,
talking
like,
about dads before?
Dads before, and then we got onto about Norm McDonald. But
yeah.
Nice. I think it's time to get crazy. I think I have a crazy story for you.
I thought you were going to pull out a bag of Coke or something.
No, thanks.
I think it's time to party.
Not me. Well, this guy that I, the guy that I'm doing my story on this week, I don't know how much he liked the party, but he definitely helped get a certain party going in the United States. You want me to go on my story first?
Are you talking about Lenin?
No. Trotsky?
Party, are we?
No.
Nice name drop.
I'm talking about a guy named George Barnett Braverman.
Okay.
So this story takes place in a little town called Windsor. So, okay. But it starts off in New York. This is where George Barnett Braverman was born. So Barney, he
beautifully born in Barbertown Braverman.
That's
bye,
right.
Oh, bye, Brett.
He didn't go by Barnett. His first name is George, but he didn't go by Barnett. He went by Barney.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we're going to be calling him Barney for the show.
A lot of Barneys back then. When was he born? When
Barney was born in 1888.
Okay. Gotcha.
So this is an old school story, but it's a lot of fun because it's in the same kind of time period as your story. So I thought it'd be fun. And Barney is best known for smuggling certain things over the border from Windsor to Detroit when that certain thing was banned in the United States, and it was not liquor. So I'll wait.
Opium, cigarettes, cocaine.
Nope.
Football on Sundays. I don't know.
Literature.
What kind of literature?
I'll tell you.
Okay.
All right, so...
That would help. They banned a thing. Okay, what was that thing? Doesn't matter, it was a thing.
It was a thing. So George Barnett Braverman was born in New York around 1888, but it's believed he spent a majority of his life growing up and working in Chicago. So not too far from here, right? 4 hours drive. So Barney, this guy loved art. Grew up and he loved art so much that he ended up going over to Paris to study with a guy named André Loti. Do you know that name?
No.
I don't know that name, but I guess he's pretty pretty famous in Paris, and he was a good art teacher. So, but Barney, you know, you only go to Paris for so long. You know, you can only find yourself in so many ways when you're over in Paris. So he has to come back to the United States, and when he came back, he works in literature, and he works in art, and he works in, like, mastheads, that kind of thing, the art departments of, like, magazines back in the day.
Yeah.
So that was a huge part of shit back in the day.
God, that's something that just will never... ever exist again.
No.
There's not even journalists anymore. It's just bloggers who do it for free and get a free Uber Eats coupon in exchange, right?
Yeah. Journalism
and if there is, it's biased, you know?
Oh, it's the fucking worst.
It's
man.
Either left or right. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. So what a time, though, when you actually had talent.
Yeah. Like massive talent. Yeah. So, but he started working for a lot of like socialist and left wing publications. So
I see where this is going. Yeah. 1888.
By the early 1910s. Battleship
Potemkin.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of crazy shit going on. Barney was the editor of Chicago for the Progressive Woman. So he was an editor for a magazine.
Rag.
Yeah.
That's a commie rag is what that's
So he was writing articles which condemned the subjugation of women and argued for the rights of suffragists. So this is before women were allowed to vote.
Yeah.
He's arguing about their ability to do so and impact society. And you know what? He was on the right track. Obviously, he had a more modern mind than most at the time. During this time, Barney, our good friend Barney, not the dinosaur. Barney is a dinosaur. Sorry, it's my 1.5-year-old daughter coming over there.
She still watches Barney still?
No, she doesn't watch Barney at all. It's all Coco Melon now.
Oh.
So during this time, he met and befriended American author Ernest Hemingway.
Oh, okay.
So this, you know, that guy's pretty famous.
Yep.
Not bad. Mm. So by 1922, these guys knew each other through their working circles. So by 1922, Braverman was working as an ad man for the Curtis Company. And the Curtis Company had two offices, one in Detroit and one in Michigan. One in Detroit and one in Windsor. So he would cross over the border every day
right,
to go to these two places. So because he knows Ernest Hemingway, Braverman Barney was contacted by a lady named Sylvia Beach. She was the owner of Shakespeare & Co., which was a successful bookstore in Paris, like English language books. So you translate them, fucking send them over to... North America, make money. I don't know. And she was the publisher of a book called Ulysses. Do you know the book Ulysses?
Yeah, it's by James Joyce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's right there.
Actually,
no. You actually have it here?
It's, it's actually, yeah.
It's somewhere. Yeah, we're definitely going to find it.
I have a couple of James Joyce.
Yeah. At the time.
Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. It's really hard to read.
It's
so hard.
I tried reading it a bit for you guys, and I'm going to save you guys. The effort.
Yeah.
It's tough to read,
it's
dude.
About
like
a young boy and grows up and right.
Yes. But this book, because it was so profane back then and so, like, it wasn't censored. It talked about penises. It talked about just, like, bowel movements. It talked about people shitting. It talked about, like, it was just really unrefined. They didn't like it at the time. And so it was hugely censored in the United States. At the time, you could get it in Canada, okay. But you couldn't get it in the United States. But people wanted it in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so this publisher, Sylvia Beach, she reaches out to our man Barney. And she says, can you help me get these books into the United States?
Okay.
Because she learns that he goes over the border every day.
Is he related to that Ukrainian man who swam across the river to deliver handmade books that I covered?
Handmade books. That's right.
Handmade copies of Ulysses by James
Joyce. Who was the guy that was pulling the
weed barrel? Underwater?
No, it was the... it was a wagon full of beer, and he was selling the beer. I forget what his name was. Oh, yeah.
And the second time he got caught, he said, sir, the first time he was selling the beer, this time he's just drinking it. Yeah, that was funny.
In public.
Yeah, the red wagon.
Yeah, that's right.
Just a red rider full of vodka.
Oh, so this book, Ulysses by James Joyce, it's profane to the extent of back in the day.
If you can understand it.
It's hard. It's hard, right? And, like, they made books and, like, they made movies out of it. And even the movies are, like, really, like, dry. But you can get the book in Canada, but you can't bring it to the United States. So what Sylvia Beach does is she ships 300 copies of Ulysses to... Barney's apartment in Windsor. So she sends 300 books to this apartment, and over the course of, like, a summer, every time he goes over the border, he brings one or two books with him, shoves them in his coat, wraps them up in cloth, because they're being as heavily inspected at the border for this kind of book as the same amount of there as alcohol.
This is 1910?
1922.
Oh, okay.
So, in the 1910s, he was working for this magazine, but in the 1922s, this is when he starts smuggling.
Okay.
But not smuggling alcohol, he's smuggling knowledge. He's smuggling the King's English, you know?
That's so corny. He's smuggling knowledge. Sorry.
I had to make you laugh. I had to get you. So, and back then, like, if you got caught with one of these books at the border, like, it was no joke. You'd get a $5,000 fine in 1922.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of goddamn money.
Yeah.
And like, guys would be rum running for that kind of money. And also a 5-year prison sentence, because that's how you know, oppressed the press was back then.
Okay.
So Barney crossed the border by ferry on a daily basis, and he carried a copy or two of Ulysses through customs. Right, so he'd, like, wrap them in cloth and, like, shove them in his book, or, like, shove them on the back of his pants, like the
same way the flappers used to put 40s down their legs, like, except he's got copies.
Exactly.
Of books. What a nerd!
What a nerd!
What a loser.
So when, so he would take the ferry, he'd bring them over, he'd carry over the books, and then when he got over to the States, he would ship them across the country via a private express company. So when the government noticed that he's going back and forth every day and he's got a copy of a book with him, but he's, you know, he becomes a little suspicious.
This is so stupid.
Yes.
Why the fuck wouldn't you just bring one copy and then just reprint them?
Exactly, right?
I'm sorry. I have no sympathy for that. He deserves to be fined $5,000 at a time. That's so dumb.
This is a strange story. That's why I thought these people would like to hear it. So after a while, he gets kind of scared, so he gets a buddy to join in on the fun with him so they can smuggle twice as many books over at a time.
These men both couldn't read, right? Clearly. Pop-up books.
Yeah, like, if they had both, if they had got caught, they would have gone to jail, right? And but by 1923, all 300 books were gone. They had gone over the border that many times that they were able to ship all 300 books from Sylvia Beach across the United States. And after that, it kind of just spreads like wildfire. Like they're saying, they start republishing it, they start copying it, and printing more and more books off. So James Joyce,
it came out in, like, 1910, right?
Yes, but it had been so suppressed by so many different groups that by the time it was suppressed, and that it was, because it had just gone through a big legal battle, and once, because it's tainted, everyone wants it, right? Because you can't have it, everyone wants it again, even if it's not a really good book. But so they sent all 300 books.
Because some people say it's the best book of all time.
Yeah,
like, right up there with.
I was reading a bunch of articles
about
it.
Catcher in the Rye. And,
yeah. But Catcher in the Rye is controversial too. Yeah. Some places are saying that this is the
cold
most.
Goddamn son of a bitch. Goddamn Colden Caulfield.
Colden Caulfield. Goddamn Holden
phonies.
Caulfield.
Oh, yeah. Goddamn phonies. Goddamn son of a bitch.
Yeah. They say that this book is like one of the most important books in the English language. I don't see it personally, but I guess I'm not what they
you
call
it. You just said it wasn't
fine.
A really good book.
No, okay. I couldn't read it because it's shit. Okay. Gotcha. I can't read it because I don't know the King's English. But some people are saying it's important.
It's not. Yeah, it's just like this Irish that's really crazy. It's like, yeah. And ye with the little lass over the old gallows with the brush and fiery. It's like, what the fuck are these people talking about?
Yeah, it was hard for me to like listen through. But at the end of the day, this book was famous because it invented the stream of consciousness narrative.
Okay.
So like anytime anyone went inside their own head and kind of was described in a book, that had never happened before. Yeah. So that's why this was groundbreaking.
Which is what Catcher in the Rye is famous for, too.
Exactly, right?
So I never read Ulysses, by the way. It was Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man.
Okay.
And it's about a kid that raises up in this nun, this like convent, and like they get raped and shit. Like,
oh,
obviously. Because that's all the
that's all
they're
shit
kid these Catholics. That's what they do. They're kid these Catholic priests. Probably have to edit that out. But that's what they do. They raped kids, and they still rape kids because they don't let them marry women. It's fucked. Anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. As you were.
Okay. But at the end of the day, it might have been a stupid thing that Barney did, but at the end of the day, it was a good thing that Barney did because he was able to, you know, help people get better books and stuff. Later, Barney created artworks for the Federal Art Project, but they weren't well received, and he is the least known member of Chicago's Palette and Chisel Club. So here's one.
So he was a painter also?
He was a painter. That's what he was an artist. That's how he got into the group, and then he became an editor because he was good at it.
What kind of paintings did he do?
They did. It was a lot of pop art at the time. It was a lot of he would do like political kind of things, and that's why they weren't really well perceived because he would go against the grain, talking about
cubism.
Women's right. Cubism is in there as well. Yeah. So one review for Barney's art shows, from the Brooklyn Daily Eagle in 1936, February 9th edition. Quote: "Static figures against his dynamic backgrounds drop his pictures to a poster level. ... He suffers from commercial art influence with his false emphasis on showiness," end quote. So I don't really know what that means, but that's our guy.
Like every art review or like have you ever tried to read like people that review albums and review music?
Yeah.
It is the most pretentious, redundant. Like if I hear the word like this delicious album or the tone that he has, you can hear the pain in his voice. It's like, it's so stupid. It's so just listen to the fucking song. Like you can't write it down. Can't. Oh,
no.
It's so. Oh, sorry. I hate that shit.
But at least
good
if
for Barney.
If Barney wasn't good at art, at least he had a good taste in books. You know what I mean? So he helped spread Ulysses, and that was a little fun thing that I found. And that's the end of my story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's all I got for Barney. Barney Braverman. I thought that was crazy. Like, why would you risk your life
and
smuggling
books?
And
then he went to Moe's Tavern and just became a barfly.
Moe Szyslak.
I could see Barney from The Simpsons. Like, that was his first life. He was a big art dealer and had an art gallery, but he just became such an alcoholic that he would just be, "Hey, Homer, what are you doing? I used to have an art gallery in Chicago. We sold Ulysses." "Yeah, sure, Barney. Hey, you'll come crawling right back."
Don't cry for me. I'm already dead. Finn. The Barney movie.
Oh my god.
Dude, when I watched Barney as a kid, you could not do anything. Like, you could poke me with a fire stick. There's home videos of me just like in a trance, just like a UFO laser beam, like just Willy. I'm just staring at this big menacing purple dinosaur. Yeah.
Beautiful. All right, we'll be right back after a message from our sponsor, Soccer Windsor.
Yeah.
Wild, Wicked, and Weird is brought to you by Soccer Windsor, the best recreational soccer league for adults in Windsor, Ontario. Right now, registration is currently open for the upcoming 2021 Men's 7-on-7 outdoor soccer season. So get your signing up today.
That's right, guys. It's a World Cup season. So if you're looking at it, you're like, you know what? I'm going to do it this time. This is my year. Go and sign up. They offer competitive and recreational divisions. So if you don't want to compete with the guys in the World Cup, you know, you can do the recreational divisions that they have.
That's
you can also do a full team or individual, if you want to meet some people there, if you're new in town, if you're a student, it's a great, great thing to do. So the leagues that they have, they come complete with online player stats, so you don't have to come there with your little notepad and write down every pass and every shin pad kick you get.
They shorted me on an assist.
People are going to hear me say the word shin pad kick and be like, this guy has never seen soccer in his life.
This guy hasn't played soccer since Timbits.
So they even have awards, guys. So don't say they're not recognizing you out there.
That's
so
right. Everyone gets a ribbon.
Check them out on Facebook at Soccer Windsor or at soccerwindsor.com. And I can't find out how to turn on Brett's phone to read it, but they're on Facebook. We'll post the link. So
that's right.
Check them out.
That's right. Check out www.soccerwindsor.com to see what the hype is all about. Soccer Windsor, the best recreational soccer league for adults in Wicklow.
Right, and we're back. By the way, it is not the World Cup, as I said. Brett informed me. Oh my God, Willie, you idiot. It's the Euro Cup, apparently.
Yeah, but Euro Cup's going to be next year.
France got embarrassed, apparently, by Switzerland. Is that what happened?
France got embarrassed in battle. What about... what? It's not like we just had to save their
asses. I think
they're
out now, though, right?
And two. What?
They're out of the tournament now.
I have no idea. I don't watch that shit.
Sorry. Didn't mean to offend you.
I'm just kidding. No, the Euro Cup's been fun. I know that the Czech Republic upset the Netherlands. That was wild. I didn't see any of the other matchups, though. Nice. All I know is that when things go good, they say, ole, 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 ole.
That's right.
Ole. Wild, wicked, and weird. Oh, no.
Yeah. I like that story.
Thanks,
I feel
man.
Like I got to pick up a book now or go to an art show.
Yeah, I tried to watch the movie version of Ulysses, and if you thought that the book was drab, the movie version is bad. Oh my God. It's not terrible, it's just long. It just I don't know.
So
it's not for me.
My story, kind of around the same era, story talks about something that happened in 1920. Do you remember a place called the President's Club? A very fine gentlemen's club in West End, Windsor.
Oh, one of those clubs.
It was a place called Rum Runners.
Yes, I've heard of Rum Runners.
It's next to the Tim Hortons right by the water treatment plant.
Yeah,
on the West End.
Funny story before you do that. We had a friend that came from out of town. Our friend Zach came from London, and we were coming from, I think, LaSalle, and we were coming into West Windsor, and we drove by the treatment plant, and he goes...
Zach was in for a surprise.
Yeah, he goes... Oh, what the fuck? Did one of you guys cut ass? Oh, that's awful, guys. What's going on? And he rolls his window down. And we go,
oh, no.
No, don't roll down the window, Zach. And then he learned that there was a sulfur treatment plant on West Windsor that day.
We called that place the poo-poo factory. That's what my dad called it. That's where all the poo-poo went.
That's the poo-poo factory.
There was a factory next to Dainty Rice.
Yes.
And that was the cloud factory. And until I was 9 years old, that's where I thought clouds came from. So we're learning about precipitation and condensation and evaporation in grade 3.
Yes.
And the teacher's like, and so kids, that's where clouds come from. And I'm like, no, Miss Trudeau, if you'll go to Dainty Rice on Front Road, you will find... The cloud factory is, in fact, where the clouds come from, and not this evaporation shit you're talking about.
I can just imagine her. She's just like Colonel Sanders in fucking Waterboy. Like, no, Colonel Sanders. Yo, wrong.
Mama's wrong.
Daddy's right. My daddy said that there was a factory that made clouds, and you ain't gonna tell me different. Vicky Bell is going to show me her boobies, and I like them too.
One time, we went on a field trip to the water treatment plant.
Yep, I did that in high school too.
You did? Dude, it was like the movie Platoon, because every 20 minutes, a kid would just puke and drop out. And by the end of it, it went from 20 kids down to like 3 kids. But one of the girls in the class, her dad was one of the managers there. So we got... We got a treat. We got a VIP tour of the poo-poo factory. So he brought us to, like, the worst of the worst. Like, we're literally looking at a 20 by 20 pool full of shit.
Oh.
And kids are literally throwing up left and right, crying. We're like 12 years old.
Stinging
and
your eyes.
The dad, he's used to it. So he's looking at us. He's like, it's not that bad, guys. And I'm like, oh my God, there's literally poo flying in my face as we speak. And you're saying it's not bad? And like, I felt so bad for the girl.
Yeah.
Not really, because like, it was cool because like her dad had this cool job, but like it smelled so bad.
Yeah,
he was used to it, obviously. Yeah. And maybe she was used to just from like visiting there or something. But yeah. Actually, no, you can't get used to that smell. And just like your friend Zach, new covers to Windsor. It was cool though to see how they treated everything and how what goes on the toilet eventually comes out of the tap because they clean it and it becomes drinkable. And
yep.
They showed where like all the wedding rings are found and stuff. Wow. And yeah, pretty cool, man.
But did you snipe a couple so you could pawn them?
No, no, they didn't let us know.
Fucking.
I was devastated.
Where's the business?
I was still reeling in from learning that the Cloud Factory wasn't. Because if they were working in overdrive, if there was really pump, if it was a really cloudy day, I'm like, oh, they must be working overtime at the,
the Cloud Factory.
All right.
Oh, so, fuck, that's good.
Anyways,
oh, my God,
what I was talking about was the President's Club, which
was a strip
club.
Oh.
It was a strip club.
I've never been to one.
Before that, it was called Rum Runners, and way before that, it was called the Chapel House.
Okay.
C-H-A-P-P-E-L-L.
Okay, and Chapel House. If it's P-P-E-L-L, it's Chapel. It's a last
name. Is it? I think it's, no, there's no E at the end. It's like Chapel.
Oh, with C-H-A-P-L.
No, C-H-A-P-P-E-L-L.
That's Chappelle, then. That's like Dave Chappelle.
No, Chappelle has an E at the end, though.
So it's Chapel? Chapel, just no E?
I don't think it's Chapel. I think it's Chappelle. You can call it Chapel. We'll find out.
No, actually, no. You're right.
Oh, now I'm right?
Pardon me. I can learn things and then change my opinion.
Okay,
a guy I went to high school with, his last name was Chapel. C-H-A-P-P-E-L-L. I'm
okay.
Wrong. Yeah, you're right.
The author of this book
that
most of the source is from, the book is called Dying for a Drink. And the author's last name, I don't know if it's Brode or Brody, because it's B-R-O-D-E. Do you know what it is?
I believe it's Brode. When I was talking to the guy at Juniper Books, he said it was Brode.
I wanted to talk about this place, this President's Club, because there was a night, there was an event that happened there back in the 20s, back in November 6, 1920. There was a showdown, a shootout, if you will, between two men.
A fucking showdown!
A wham, bang, bang. There's a shootout between two men. One of them was a preacher. His name was Joseph Leslie Spracklin. He was a preacher. He was against booze. He was, for all things godly, he was a God-fearing man. He was a Methodist preacher in Windsor, and people loved him, and he was fighting the Rum Runners.
Yep, doing the Lord's work.
And he had a shootout with the owner of the Chapel House, of the pre-President's Club, a man named Beverly Trumbull. So it's two men named Leslie and Beverly.
Kind of confusing at first glance.
It is, yeah. So Beverly, remember.
How long?
Think of Beverly as bartender. So that's how I remember. Beverly's the bartender of the Chapel House, and Leslie is the Lord.
That's right.
He's the Lord's fighter.
How far into this book did you realize that they were both men and not women?
Right away, yeah.
Okay.
But I'm sure a bunch of people thought it.
That's
like,
true, yeah.
The Windsor Star did an article about the 100th anniversary, and they just said it was Beverly Trumbull, and I'm sure people read it and didn't. I've never heard of a man named Bev. A man named Sue. So both of these families, they were originally from Woodstock, and they both eventually moved to Windsor, each for different employment opportunities.
Yep.
So the Spracklin family, Joseph Spracklin, he was the preacher, the one who was against booze, against prohibition.
Yep.
His dad was in the horse racing industry. He was a saddle maker, which is a low-paying occupation. And the Trumbulls, Beverly's family, they were a little more up class. They had a bake shop, confectionery place, and they actually made some decent money at that.
Oh, yeah. Cakes and stuff back in the day. Sweets, treats.
But
yeah.
The Spracklins, even though they made less money doing that, they had something on the side, because the Spracklin boys, the sons, they were great at fighting. And prize fighting, you could make a lot of money. Because even though it was illegal, there was big prize fights. And you could make a pretty penny back in those days.
Yeah, turn of the century, early 19th century. Early 1900s. Boxing and baseball were the two biggest sports. Because that's all people basically followed.
So Leslie Spracklin, he had a brother named Willie, who was a great fighter. And people loved him. And so he had a bunch of great fights. He had this one fight against a guy from Cleveland. It lasted 25 rounds.
Oh, my
Ended
God.
Ended in a draw. But they say it was like one of the best fights ever.
Yeah.
And so he had a big following. And people loved Leslie Sprocklin's brother, Willie. You know, he was, imagine how proud he was of his brother, of beating the shit out of this fucker.
Hell yeah. If your brother's the baddest dude in town, like, your chest instantly buffs up. Like,
yeah. So his brother.
So his brother's a really good fighter.
He loved his brother, and he had this crazy fight. But Willie, his career came to an end in 1906 when one of his friends died in a boxing match, a separate boxing match in Grand Rapids. And Willie was depressed. He stopped boxing. And a year later, he actually died in a hunting accident. And one of his friends accidentally shot him.
Oh,
and there
no.
was alcohol involved. And so Leslie was depressed because his brother Willie died from an alcohol-related accident. So right away, he kind of hated booze off the bat because his younger brother, who would have been an amazing boxer, you know, was gunned down. Uh-huh. But the guy who killed his brother was a guy named Star Mason.
Star.
And he is a sport. He was a big sports guy back in Windsor back in the day. And I just want you to remember his name because it comes up later. But Star Mason was out hunting with Willie Spracklin, and he ended up killing him by accident.
By accident.
It was an accident. Okay. Yes. So now, when they were kids in Windsor, because even though they were born in Woodstock, they moved to Windsor when they were young.
Yep.
It was rumored that it was kind of like a West Side Story type deal. Like, each kid were in a gang, and there was two gangs, and Leslie Spracklin was the leader of one gang, and Bev Trumbull was the leader of the other gang.
Yeah.
So you could just imagine them down Olette Avenue, like, beat it, boy. Here come the Jets. You're the swingin'est thing. Little boy, you're a man. Little man, you're a king. Do a ballet move. Wah, wah.
Sashay. And jazz hands.
Yeah. And one of the guys who perpetuates this rumor is Star Mason. He talks about these fights they would have after this event happens, you know, when they're much older. But there's not really much evidence to support this. I guess the, you know, the archives of children's gangs and street fightings of the 1900s may be incomplete, Brett.
That's right. They might not have had such a strong street crew there for the Windsor Police Department there, see? Yeah.
So when these guys were kids, there's actually records of saying how the Spracklin kids, how they were the poorer ones, they're from the horse family, they would actually go to the bake shop that the Trumbulls own. And Mrs. Trumbull, Bev's mother, would give these Spracklin kids treats for free because she knew they were poor, they were probably hungry.
Yeah.
So they weren't really nemesis, but this idea of them being nemesis was nemesis. What is it? Nemesis?
Nemesis.
See, an enemy. It's a lot juicier, but I don't know if it was really like that. So back to when they're a little older. So Leslie Spracklin, after Willie dies, he's really affected by it. He's depressed.
For sure.
He hates booze, but he got a job at the Ford plant. He was a great employee. He was well-liked, but he never went to the bars afterwards with everyone.
Yep.
He never swore, and if you swore in front of a lady, you were going to hear it from Leslie. He did not take to that. And I immediately thought of that scene in Mr. Deeds where the guy takes off his belt and he's like, "You use foul language in front of a lady."
No, Daddy, no!
He would do that probably. Yeah. So he's a.
But you know what, though? That's one thing that I really wish would come back, because there's no need.
What?
There's no need to swear in front of.
Beat with
no, belt? There's no need to be swearing in front of ladies.
Yeah. Sometimes it's the ladies doing the swearing, though.
That's right.
Yeah, but
it's an equal
never
world.
Nice
there.
To use. Yeah, exactly. It's nice to be courteous. So, but Spracklin, even though he was a well-liked employee at the Ford plant, he felt he had a calling from God, and he eventually left. He eventually left to become a Methodist preacher in 1909, and eventually became, you know, ordained. That's what they call it, because Methodism was huge back then.
Yes.
It was really big, a lot bigger than Catholicism.
Yeah. So is that where Method Man, the rapper, came from?
It is.
He is a Methodist?
I was going to tell. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. And Red Man, he was from, I don't know.
He was a communist. That's why. Yeah. And so the communists and Methodists. You know,
there you go.
They came up with the commune, the common method.
Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to fuck with.
So he becomes a Methodist minister. So that's Spracklin. So he's on his path to God. He's had a vision, and he's going to avenge his brother's death by bringing righteousness to the world and demolishing sin and, you know,
fighting the good fight.
Yeah. Cracking all the whiskey barrels. So Beverly Trumbull, his arch nemesis from the street fighting days, on the other hand, he purchased the Chapel House. in the West End. He renovated it and he turned it into a respectable establishment because it was, you know, these places, they were stops for stagecoaches from people going from Amherstburg to Windsor, and they would stop there and get a room. They would drink, you know, whatever. So he renovated it, and eventually he would make a lot of money at this place because he would fit hundreds of people into here, and he would have shows and dancers, and he had an all-black staff, so it's kind of like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, like only, I don't know why, but it, apparently they were, you know, well-paid and, like, everyone liked them, so but that was just nice. One thing they had for some, I don't know if that was a thing back then, but it was a really booming place that people loved to go to, and he started making good money from there in the 1910s, especially when Prohibition. Now, Prohibition, it's not like Prohibition just started in the 20s, and ended in 33. In, you know, in the 1800s, there was so many different Prohibition laws and temperance acts passed in individual states, in different provinces. Sometimes they were federal, sometimes they were provincial. It's so confusing back and forth.
But it took a huge movement in the United States to make it like a regional thing into an actual like nationwide thing into like an amendment of the Constitution. It's fucked.
So in the 1910s, it's really big. Bootlegging is huge. But when the war happens, it kind of stops because people realize that it kind of hurts the war effort.
Yeah.
And they would have posters that say, you know, every drink helps the enemy, so stop drinking.
Well, they would do, like, posters full of, like, kegs of beer, and they would have, like, big German swastikas on them and saying, you're helping the Huns by drinking beer, like, that kind of thing.
Well, not World War One, they wouldn't have swastikas.
World War II,
So, anyways, they kind of get... So, Spracklin, he gets kind of a push in 1914 to kind of, you know, fight the good fight. So, Beverly Trumbull, he takes a different path, and he's, you know, running the Chapel House because people love liquor in the 1910s and up to the 20s.
It was a big problem, bro. Like, it's bad.
So,
just drunkenness was everywhere.
So, bootlegging, it was becoming so big in the border cities. And like I said, it took a bit of a break in the First World War. But when the World War was done, everyone said, life is precious. Life is short. Why can't we just have a drink? And these things, it made me think of, that always happens in history. You look at the Renaissance, which was spawned from the bubonic plague, which killed so many people and made people think, wow, you know, well, then they had all these resources, and that spawned kind of an intellectual revolution that, you know, the Medicis and all of that. You have World War II. After that was done, all the 60 million people or whatever that died, that, you know, being the economic boom of the 50s in the U.S., you know.
Baby boomers,
they went the other way in the East, but in Russia. But whenever there's a horrible thing, sometimes something good can happen
from it.
You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah,
am I
for
just
sure.
talking here?
You can learn from a bad period of time and make it into something good.
Yes.
Yep.
So
evolving.
But by the end of the First World War and by the start of the 20s, it was just taking on a whole new level, the amount of bootlegging. And the rest of the country is getting on with temperance and prohibition. But Windsor's just a fucking wild west. It's just insane down there. So Windsor, it was known as the Essex Frontier or the Borderlands. And people who were regular wage workers, they could make, you know, insane cash just by bootlegging on the side. An example of this is in 1920s, there's a judge who had mercy on a bootlegger in Windsor. And the bootlegger was pleading with the judge, you know, I have a big family. Please, can you reduce the fine from $500 to $400? He's crying in front of the judge. His wife is crying with all her babies. And the judge says, okay, I'll turn it down from, you know, $500 to $400. And the wife says, oh, thank you. And she pulls out a stack of greenbacks and paid it there, $400. And the court just gasped, went, like, no one would have $400 just on them. But they were making so much money, they were able to do that.
Oh, yeah. If you were rum running and you got caught, it didn't really matter because you were making so much by rum running.
It was just fines
back then. You could just pay fines.
You weren't going to jail at this point.
Yeah, they would easily pay fines.
So Windsor was so big into rum running that here's another example. Bootleggers, they started complaining about the long neck bottles of Canadian Club because they would tend to break when they were transporting them in burlap bags.
Yeah.
So Hiram Walker, right away, they switched it over to these durable square gate bottles, which were like the not the long ones that could endure the rigors of bootleg and make the journey. So
that's funny.
They changed the industry to accommodate the criminals, which is hilarious.
Gotta make money, baby.
It's such a big part of the economy.
Well, yeah, because back in Canada, like, you could make it, but you couldn't sell it in Canada. So, like,
there was so many different laws, and, like, I would have done a timeline, but, like, there was medicinally, and then you couldn't sell it, so people would have, like, 300 quarts of whiskey, and that was, like, just for them medicinally, which obviously it wasn't.
Yeah. Drinking it, only buying it was illegal. Drinking it was not. So people would just stockpile booze for years and years before Prohibition.
At times it wasn't. It changed a lot. But so Spracklin, he's a preacher in Windsor. And he's very vocal against, you know, in his sermons against booze and preaching against the chapel house and talking about how that Beverly Trumbull's a sinner and he's got a terrible left hook and he was always a pussy back in grade one, you know? And
his mom makes shitty cookies.
Exactly. She makes shitty cookies, even though she gave them away for free. Yeah. So while he's doing this, you know, but he's actually not very well liked in Windsor because Windsor is so pro bootlegging. They don't like him talking about how bad it is because everyone's getting paid. But Toronto was fascinated by Spracklin. They were fascinated by the fighting parson, the fighting preacher. They loved the stories of the wild borderlands and this preacher fighting the good fight. And they ate it up.
Oh, yeah.
One time, the Toronto Daily newspaper, they sent down a reporter to a popular bar in Windsor that was known for debauchery and feverish orgies, just right out in the open. These people get so drunk and people get murdered there. This place was called the Sunnyside Tavern in La Salle.
And the Sunnyside!
So the Toronto newspaper, they paid a reporter to go down there and check out this debaucherous club. And he went, and he had a great time.
They had a band playing,
they had nice ladies there, and it wasn't a bad time. Even though it was illegal, it was very civilized and nice, and it was pleasant. And so they were kind of surprised about that. It wasn't as crazy, but at other times it was. Like, there was shootouts every night. It eventually got wild. Yeah, so he would...
Can you imagine just the shootouts? Like, you get a couple...
But at this couple time, of factory workers shootouts.
Get a couple of fucking shots of whiskey in them. They get into a brawl. You know what I mean? Like, it could happen any time of the day.
So, I want to talk about a night in 1920 in June. June 19th, 1920. It was like any other weekend, you know, in the border city. And the chapel house was booming. There was people everywhere. And Spracklin, he was on patrol. He would just park outside it and just like with his notepad and just look at all the drunks coming out. And he would talk about it at his bar the next day.
I can just imagine him in his preacher's outfit just like tapping on windows. Yeah, just like looking at the trunks. Like
the kid in Scary Movie on the bike, right? I think that, or Road Trip, I forget.
I don't remember.
Anyways, so he's wondering, where are all the police? There's hundreds of drunks in this place. This is disgusting. So he eventually was called up to Toronto on the next month, in July 22nd, because he would make such a fuss about it in his sermons, and Toronto kept hearing about him. So on July 22nd, Spracklin was invited to meet the Attorney General, William Rainey, and the Liquor License Board Chairman, J.D. Flavelle, in Toronto. And he pleaded his case, and they loved him so much that 5 days later, on July 27th, he actually got his gold star, and he was officially appointed a provincial liquor license inspector.
Oh, so they gave a preacher
a little badge, and I was imagining it was kind of like the sheriff thing that Andy would have gotten in Toy Story. Like, he thinks he's like an FBI agent now. Like, someone's poisoned the water hole.
You're my favorite deputy.
So he came back, and he's like, I'm going to fight the good fight. His first day as an official provincial license inspector ended in a brawl. He raided a hotel in a place called Jackson's Corners on the outskirts of Windsor. Okay. And the people there just literally beat the shit out of him. Like, a fucking priest shows up with a gun on his hip and a little badge that he says he got from the Attorney General. And they just beat the shit out of him. And so he went back. And he said, okay, I need help. I need some deputies or something.
Yeah, so, I need some deputies.
Crown Attorney J.H. Rod, who was Essex County Crown Attorney, and he was really against booze.
Yeah, fervent abolitionist.
Yeah, exactly. Well, abolitionist. I'm sure that's
prohibitionist. Yeah. Prohibitionist.
Abolitionist too, because he was a God-fearing man.
Yep.
He also hated baseball on Sundays.
Oh,
but
what?
Other days of the week it was fine.
It's okay. But just this not man the Lord's was known day.
For hating baseball on Sundays. He hated horse racing and he hated booze. His name was J.H. Rod. And I actually know one of his dependents, Evan Rod. You probably know him too. He's a really popular kid. But I asked him and he's like, oh, because he has an uncle or grandpa, great grandpa, who was another crown attorney somewhere. So it was the same person eventually. But I knew Evan Rod from, you know, playing hockey and baseball. Yep. But on Sundays, he could never come out because, like his grandpa, he couldn't play on Sundays. And
wow.
That's not true. Anyways, he's a
nice
good
guy, though.
He's a good guy, and yeah. his great grand, this crown attorney, was also a good person that was really well liked, and he was really fighting the good fight against these bootleggers. But he eventually appointed some constables to help Spracklin so he wouldn't get beat up at the Jackson Court to go back like fighting the bully at the playground.
Yeah,
like,
I
back
have my
now.
Friends now.
So he's basically like. So he's basically like Kevin Costner in, you know, recruiting Sean Connery now in The Untouchables.
That's right.
So it's not really known how they did this or how they were selected, but the guys they picked were very, very shady. They picked these two guys called the Hallam Brothers, William and Stanley, and they would just rob anything they found. They would just take your money, take your guns, take your booze. They would assault women and children. Like, they were just terrible
They're not
people.
Good guys.
So he has his band of deputies, and instead of maintaining order in Windsor's hotels and bars, because some hotels, even though you couldn't serve booze, you could sell what was called soft beer,
yeah,
or like corn beer, like it was like 2% beer, like you yeah. couldn't get drunk. And but instead of doing that, Spracklin immediately started patrolling the Detroit River and boarding American vessels, arresting Americans and enforcing the American prohibition laws. And right away people were like, what the fuck are you doing? You can't do this. You're this a Canadian preacher. You're literally in Detroit arresting Americans.
Yeah, this is fucked.
What the fuck?
You have no jurisdiction
with this little
here.
Fake badge. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's
great.
This
hilarious.
Guy had balls, bro.
Yes. One time, Stanley Hallam, one of the Hallam brothers, he stopped a funeral procession to search the hearse and casket for booze.
Oh, no.
And they say he, like, ripped people off, too, there. And people were pissed. They wanted him gone. People were getting fed up with these idiots, you know, and so were the regular police in Windsor, because they were being made to look horrible. They were actually getting seizures. They were actually putting up numbers, even though there's a lot of booze getting passed. And Spracklin, they were just doing dumb shit, making
yeah.
headlines.
They were like, just harassing people.
One time, they actually arrested a man who was on a boat with a bunch of people, turned out to be the mayor of Windsor. He wanted an apology, and Spracklin wouldn't give it to him. He said, no, like, you had this booze, like, you're in trouble, you know? So, and the Hallam brothers, they were, you know, terrible. But
yeah,
so they eventually
brutal.
Got fired, and they were replaced by Spracklin's own brother, who was also a preacher, and another farmer who had no police experience at all. So they just give them guns, give them badges, and say, you guys are cops.
You guys are cops now. Yeah. Let's go fight some prohibition. Yeah.
And the other Hallam brother was already long gone. He was living somewhere else after stealing a bunch of money and, you know, being a fuck. So it was just crazy. Like, the Walkerville police force, there was like 38 cases of whiskey that went missing in the evidence room. So they just fired the entire Walkerville police force. Just got rid
of
all of them. The same thing happened in Amherstburg. The entire Amherstburg or Anderton police force was disbanded. And the town was literally run by a gang called the Blood and Thunder Gang. That was the police force in Amherstburg. So nowadays,
Thunder.
People, like, doesn't Amherstburg, aren't they patrolled by Windsor now, cops?
Yes.
So, like, if you're thinking, if you live in Amherstburg nowadays, just imagine being patrolled by the Blood and Thunder Gang. Like, just these idiots with guns.
On horses, probably. On
probably,
horseback.
Yeah. Probably Thunder. Just having Model Ts back then. So this Blood and Thunder Gang, they told Spracklin, you better not fucking come here. Like, we'll fucking kill you. And Spracklin said, well, you should expect me, because we're coming. So they shot up his house and almost killed his wife. Like, a bullet
shit.
Went, like, right over her head. And he didn't go back to Amherstburg after that.
Smart man.
So, and it was just craziness. It was like a movie, like these idiots running around. It was like a Mel Brooks movie.
This,
like,
would be a fun movie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There was another time on September 17th where they used a large boat to patrol the river, and they followed a large yacht, and it turned out to be the property of Oscar Fleming, who was Windsor's first mayor. And they were just having a dinner with a couple guests, and they had some alcohol, like a little bit, and these people boarded waving guns, and the mayor wanted an apology, and Spracklin said, nope, I'm doing my job.
No, fuck
yeah.
you.
So this brings us to the main part of our story, which is one night a couple of weeks later on November 6, 1920. Spracklin was patrolling in his car, and he was outside the chapel house once again with his little notepad.
Yep.
And it wasn't big night. There was a couple of people there, but there was one guy. You saw a man lying out on the ground, and it was a man named Ernie DeSlip, and he was just lying there, passed out, hurt. And so he came up and he said, hey, Ernie, what's wrong? And Ernie said, oh, you know, I got knocked out. But Ernie was part of the gang that would hang out there at Beverly Trumbull's hideout. So it was like an inner conflict that they probably beat him up for.
Yeah.
So Spracklin, he's like, well, I have to investigate. Like, there's no evidence of bootlegging, no evidence of illegal activity, but he has to raid the place immediately. So he tries to get in. They just laugh at him. They just lock the door. They're like, are you fucking stupid? Like, go back to the church, right? Like,
yeah. So we know who you are, dummy.
Like, so he climbs in through a window and storms. And he's like, I want to see everyone's hands up. You know, where's the booze? And Beverly Trumbull comes into the front room and asks, what's going on here? I want to see every one of your badges. And Spracklin, he always maintained that Beverly Trumbull had a gun when he came out. So he's saying he had a gun and Spracklin had a gun. And he's always maintaining that. And he's saying, well, it's... and then he says that Trumbull looked directly at Spracklin, dead in the eye, and said, damn you, Spracklin, I am going to shoot you.
Damn you, Spracklin!
That's what he said. So it was him or me. That's what he said. So Spracklin shoots Beverly Trumbull right in the stomach.
Oh.
And he dies. He bleeds out. His wife Lulu comes by screaming. She says, you bastard, Joseph Spracklin, you killed my husband, Joseph Leslie Spracklin. So he dies. And Spracklin just runs. Just leaves.
Yeah.
Like... he always maintains that Trumbull had a gun, but they never really found a gun.
Yeah.
And so eventually he goes to trial for this. And during the trial, he's maintaining that there was a gun.
If he got fucking headlines for doing the shit he did before, imagine the headlines he got after doing this.
It was huge news, especially in Toronto.
That's what I mean. Because
Toronto loved him.
Yes.
Windsor, not so much.
Well, yeah, and like Toronto's the political center of the province, right? So
it took the jury less than an hour to come back, and they completely acquitted him.
No!
Scot-free.
No! Yeah.
So after this,
fuck no.
Spracklin resigned as the pastor. Because he didn't want to stay in the sandwich because there were so many death threats against him.
Yes.
He eventually moved to the U.S. in 1922. He kept on campaigning for the prohibition of alcohol. He was even a traveling guest speaker for the Anti-Saloon League, ASL. Yes. Remember being on ice cubing ASL, age, sex, location?
That's right. The Anti-Saloon League.
And he lived a long life and died in 1960 when Beverly, after he basically killed Beverly Trumbull.
Murdered him.
Well, I don't know. Did he have a gun? Did he say he was going to kill him?
Doesn't matter.
I don't know. It's very hard to find evidence. He's trespassing. Back then. There's a lot of rumors. And
he's trespassing and he shot a man so unprovoked.
Remember that guy, Star? Star?
Star Mason.
Star Mason.
Is it two R's?
Nope. One R.
Just one R? Because if it's two R's, that means you're a porn star.
It does mean you're a porn star. So he actually talks about how during the trial, like, they're asking for evidence, and they want to paint this picture of them being, you know, arch enemies since they were kids. So Star Mason, who was the guy who fucking killed Leslie's brother, he talks about, he, you know, a Detroit newspaper interviewed him, you know, because he knew both families, and Star Mason would talk about how much they loved fighting and they hated each other back in the day, and how much of a good man Beverly Trumbull was and how much of a piece of shit Leslie Spracklin was.
Oh, so he flipped it.
So he said, quote, there was only one difference between them. Leslie never knew when he was licked, and Babe, who was Beverly, they called him Babe, was a one-punch fighter. Babe was always feared by his opponents. They knew he carried a good punch and he was respected for it. Mason also felt that Trumbull wasn't what you would call a fighting kid. He could fight when pressed and he could fight hard. But on the other hand, Leslie seemed to love to fight. So he's saying how Spracklin's the aggressor. He, even 100%. Back then, during the fighting days, the West Side Story days, they liked to fight. Other evidence that, and other rumors, you know, that kind of helped Spracklin get off. And he got the fuck out of Windsor and went to
He definitely had the backing of the politics, right? Because he was working for the government in a certain capacity.
He was losing that backing because people were getting pissed with his antics.
Oh, for sure.
Like arresting the mayor, getting in shootouts. It was found out he wasn't even allowed to legally carry a gun.
Oh, God.
And he went everywhere with a gun. He would have these sermons and talk about booze. And while he was preaching, his goons would be searching the cars of his parishioners and, like, stealing shit from them. What a guy. And there was rumors that he was a little too involved with the female parishioners and other stuff, as there always is. But anyways, if you want to hear more about this story or more about prohibition and rum running, I highly suggest you read this book. It's called Dying for a Drink, and it's by Windsor lawyer and author Patrick Brode. It's a great read. You can get it at Biblioasis or what's that other place?
Juniper Books.
Juniper Books. You can get all nine. It's awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
And Marty Gervais wrote a book about it called Rum Runners, I think.
That's right.
I read that one. But great books, and I highly suggest you read them if you like that stuff.
Yeah.
And the President's Club, the Chapel House, is no longer there. It was torn down in 2006. There's nothing there anymore. But it was actually called Rum Runners after that. For a long time. And because it was known for that famous shooting, and we recently passed the 100th anniversary, so that's my story.
Yeah. Great job, man. I think lots of, a double Windsor story this week, and we get to, wow, Jesus, fuck, that was, I'm still processing that story.
It's a little confusing because the names are hard. It's Joseph Oswald Leslie Spracklin and Beverly Babe Trumbull.
Yes.
Like, are you kidding me, man? And I had to keep remembering, okay, this one's the preacher, this one's the booze hound. It's, it's tough, so, yeah.
Well, if you like that story or you like our telling of that story, give us a 5-star review on Apple or wherever you get your podcast or wherever you are able to review. Give us a follow on social media at Wild Wicked and Weird Podcast on Facebook, at Wild Wicked W on Twitter, wildwickedandweird@gmail.com. Follow us on YouTube as well. And you can follow us on TikTok, not the Kesha song, the app, right?
That's right.
That's right.
Exactly. All right, guys. So episode 21, done and done. Thanks for joining us, and leave a review if you liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Leave us a post, and have a great, great week. Stay cool out there.
That's right. We'll stay wild, wicked, and weird. See you soon. Bye-bye.